Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. It is episode number 249, broadcasting to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky. This is Stephen Zimmer, and tonight I'm joined by the one and only, the great Daniel Dark, and shortly Rosemary Machario will be joining us. I know you probably had seen that we had posted that R.G. Westerman would be also co-hosting tonight, and I was not going to be, but she had a family emergency, so I'm actually stepping in at the last minute, so hope you're not too disappointed. But Daniel Dark, good to have you with me in the early part of the show, and then hopefully Rose will be joining us just shortly and get this night off to a good positive start.
It is wonderful to be here.
Yes, sir.
Everybody
I am relieved to be here, believe me.
Everybody
after the
we're in these shutdowns and everything else, but they cannot, you know, we can still do this. We can still communicate with people. And that is the positive thing right there.
Well, yeah.
Don't give a crap.
Knock on wood, because oh my God.
We're in chill mode.
Yes, we are relaxed. We're in chill mode, and we have a fantastic guest coming up tonight who I'm going to really enjoy talking with. And Holly almost it wasn't her turn tonight, but I know she also would have loved to also be on tonight because we got a great guest on tonight, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm looking very much forward to it. And you're right, we still can communicate, folks. We still could do stuff. We still could be creative. And despite the utter dystopian sanity going on elsewhere in the world, we can all the craziness, you know, we can definitely keep on keeping on our paths. So I encourage everyone to do so. And join us tonight on the live chat room if you are listening. It is working and open, so I will be taking comments and questions for tonight's guests in there. But Daniel, how have things been going since last week's check-in?
As good as it's snow, you know.
Yeah, as good as snow. That's about right. Oh man,
You can predict anything that you want to predict. You know, when snow wants to fall, it falls. A buddy of mine moved from Michigan to Florida. I saw a post from him the other day. All they said, it had a picture outside of his place in Florida with snow on the ground. And it was like, F you, snow.
Imagine. Yeah, I know. Well, I know our good friend Carl Moore definitely is not fond of snow because I know recently he had a massive one with like a good 2 feet dropped on him in upper New York. And he and I were chatting during that adventure. And he was definitely not fond of snow at that moment. no fun there. But we don't, thankfully, Kentucky is not currently covered in snow, so we're okay at the moment. But
well, all the places that I've got snow left is I've got some out on my back deck, but on the ground and everything, it has melted off the ground mostly and stuff. So
well, good. Let's give you a little break.
But we had one of the higher, inch numbers around here, I think.
Yeah, you did.
You
guys got a good one. You got a good one.
Some other areas didn't get any, but we, for some reason, right here where I'm at, we got, just a few inches, but it's just enough to make it semi-miserable. I didn't even walk outside that day.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Yep. Yeah, it's...
You know, I feel your pain. Snow is not one of them.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah, hoping to avoid that here. Hoping we make it as long as possible before we get our usual yearly deluge here, because we always get one, at least good one, here in Lexington. But, yeah, I'm not quite ready for it because we had, as you know, a lot of fun adventures with our heater in our home. So, yeah, we're hoping to get all that squared away. Yeah, hopefully.
But,
yeah, we won't get into all that, Daniel. That's so messed. Yeah, I've been through so many hoops. We're not even going to mention that. But, yeah, because that's very little to do with the creative world.
A buddy of mine years ago and everything, he bought him an airplane. And he had it snow worse than I did. He goes, he had money where, you know, didn't have to work or anything like that. He was retired at age 29. And I go, why'd you buy an airplane? I go, you can't fly an airplane. He goes, I've got a pilot. He goes, when it snows outside or gets cold, he goes, we go out and get in the plane. I go, take me south until it hits 80 degrees on the ground. We can land then.
Oh, man. Yeah. No kidding. No kidding, man. So let's see here tonight. Better take care of our awesome sponsors tonight. We actually have a new spot to run for everybody tonight. Tonight we have the mighty Ren Garcia Onward, the man himself from League of Elders series. And we also have returning Sandy Lender, author Sandy Lender. And hopefully Sandy will stop by and say hi in the chat room tonight. Yeah, she's often does. So tonight, we will go ahead and we are going to start out with Ren so we can have him ask his famous question at the end that we all love to give a response to. Just a second here. Let me cue this up.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
No.
Yes.
No, I'm not weird at all.
No.
Everybody else
Yeah,
is.
No, not you. Oh, I love that question, but I always have to answer in the affirmative. Yes, Ren. I am weird enough for you. We are weird enough for you, for sure. So, great guy. So, yeah, check out the League of Elder series, folks. And now I will play for you the brand-new Sandy Lender spot.
Are you looking for an escape from reality? Follow author Sandy Lender on the Amazon platform. You'll find some award-winning titles in fantasy and science fiction and all kinds of good things. Follow author Sandy Lender on the Amazon platform to get your escape from reality.
Thank you, Sandy. Yeah, very much appreciate that. And definitely check out Sandy Lender on Amazon.com. And calling in to just now from a area code I was not looking for there. It is Rose Marie Machario. Welcome, Rose. Sorry about that. I thought you were our guest on hold there, but yeah, there you are. I see you. You should be live.
Rose.
I hope.
Rose.
Yeah, she's. Hi, Rose.
Rose,
I think you're there.
Put up your fist.
Yeah, raise your hand.
You can do it.
Okay. We'll have to, hopefully, maybe it's just like a mic issue. We'll go ahead and leave her mic on, and hopefully she'll get that sorted out here in a second, because our guest will be checking in with us in just a few minutes. And hello to Clayton Barnett in the chat room, and definitely looking forward to seeing you again, Clayton. Great contribution, by the way, last week. Loved your call-in. That was awesome.
Thank you, Clayton.
So. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, a lot of fun. Yeah, when you came in after John Pica last week. And so, yeah, that we definitely had fun with that. So Rose, are you there? Are you there yet? I don't think that is. Okay. Let's see. Hold on just a second. Okay, that was not Rose, however. That might have been our guest. So I thought it was Rose because we got a message from Rose that said that she was on hold. So I saw the number there, but it wasn't a familiar one, so I thought it was might be her.
It was Bill.
It might be her. Okay. There we go. There, I think this is Rose.
It's
Rose,
me now.
Come. Okay, there you are. There you are. Excellent. Okay, I got a little confused there. I got a note from Holly that
we can do it.
But you're here, Rose. You've joined us. You made it. Yay.
Better late than never.
How are you?
Well,
no, it's all right.
Like always.
You never know with live stuff how it goes or where the calls come in sometimes. And oh boy, it's definitely an adventure. But
right?
How have you been, Rose? Give us some cheering. Our focus tonight is on the upbeat since we're in the middle of
awesome.
This dystopia right now. We want to focus on the upbeat. So give us some good Rose Marie Machario updates. Something from your world that'll cheer us all up.
I finally got my merch in and been slowly but surely adding it to my store online. So that's a good thing, especially after 5 months.
Yes. No, that's excellent. That's excellent. And yes, and I have to say, yeah, definitely get me links to whatever you need for that, because we'll definitely share those in our channels and definitely on the Star Chamber Show channel as well, since, you know, you, of course, are one of our co-host family. But congratulations on that. That's awesome. And good
Thank
to see
you
taking strides here.
What is your store, Rosie?
What?
What is your store?
It's on my website. It's just myname.com. And then it's it's my Dream Big store that's in the, like, in on the website, like whenever you go to scroll.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I have all the things Dream Big associated, but you know, I've got copies of the book to sign, and I've got replicas of the amulet available.
Very cool.
And I'm going to have eventually coming soon, I'm going to have the title series logo on different things too. It's on the to-do
cool.
list. Yes.
Excellent.
So that way
Are you doing your Dream Big t-shirts and stuff like that, or?
I'm using my slogan. I'm using my Always Dream Big catchphrase instead of just plain Dream Big, because I think that it means more. And then I use the Always Dream Big just as my main thing that I say. I even autograph, you know, Always Dream Big. So that's my motto.
it's definitely got much more of a ring than occasionally Dream Big, right? So that's definitely a better motto. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Dream Big.
Yes.
Or sometimes.
Awesome. Well, I will have to definitely check that out and pick something up from the store. That sounds awesome. Yeah, so that's cool. Thanks for sharing, Rose. That's good news. Awesome.
Yes.
You're ready to hit the ground running. That's good. Yeah, because
I
know it won't be too long till Holly's been I know Holly's been immersed in your novel right now in terms of the editing phase, and I know that's coming right down the pike. So, but yeah, I know she was at it today in the midst of all the repair person adventures we were having.
Right.
It did happen.
I've been there.
Yeah, it's coming down the pike. And but we do have our guest, and yes, I've got this sorted out now. And our guest is on deck. And those of you who have been to Imaginarium before may have known and met our guest. We definitely have new listeners tonight who will be encountering our guest for the very first time. And our guest is a writer of speculative fiction, science fiction, fantasy, alternative military history. Great, great stuff. We're talking The Last Brigade series, Time Wars, Task Force Zombie, Sharp Steel High Adventure, and Four Horsemen Universe. Great stuff, among many others. And I welcome to the show tonight the one, the only, William Allen Webb. And your mic is on, sir.
Wow. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, William.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you.
Please call me Bill.
I will.
Bill.
All right, you got it.
There we go.
And
Holly
said to tell you hi. She just nudged me.
So hi, Holly.
She said the longer hello.
I'm gonna try not to,
she's listening.
I'm going to try not to screw this up.
Is that anything like Billy the Kid?
I couldn't hear you.
Is that anything like Billy the Kid?
Yes. Actually, if you really want to know the truth, Billy the Kid shows up in the second book in the Hit World series. So,
awesome.
Hi.
Yeah, it's not the Billy the Kid, but it is a Billy the Kid. So, yeah. So,
very
how's
cool.
Everybody doing?
Very
doing good.
As much as things can be in this very, as I said, kind of dystopian world we're in, but we're certainly forging ahead on our end, and it sounds like you are. I mean, definitely. I know you have a lot to talk with us about. It was the first time you've been on the show, and Holly had told me that you're going to be talking tonight about a brand new series. In fact,
I am, and you guys pay attention for my Universe co-creator Larry Hoyt said he was going to call in.
Yes,
and,
I've been told that.
Then,
yes.
Okay, and then the publisher, Chris Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And
very
yes,
good.
I'm looking
Chris
out for
Kennedy.
Those phone calls.
Okay, cool. Okay, great. So I appreciate you having me on. You know, Imaginarium's one of my favorite cons. And it really just broke my heart we couldn't have it last year, you know? I mean, there's no use going on about it, but I've now missed, you know, some cons are rolling over into their second year of not happening, and it's really, really a shame. I hope it doesn't have a lingering effect.
Well,
so, yeah.
It probably will this year, but we're still going to try to have something a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, I know some are still on the schedule, and if humanly possible, they're going to go off, so we'll see. But anyway, yeah, I appreciate the nice intro. It's funny how I've been doing this for 50 years, but my first novel didn't come out until about 4.5 years ago. And so I'm the proverbial overnight success that took 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
because you got a big catalog.
Well, I do, and there's I think I counted on the schedule for this year that I'm planning 27 books that are either I'm writing or I am in some way associated with. I'm editing them or it's in one of my universes, something like that.
Very
so,
cool.
And the main thing I want to make sure I do is the consistency of quality. I don't want to put out a bad book. So, you know, we'll see.
Right.
At my age, you start looking at things and go, I just want people to enjoy them. And whatever success comes my way is awesome. But if I can raise a few other boats too, that's even better.
Well, then we are similar.
Well,
I think in a very similar way.
I'm sorry. I heard you. Somebody was talking in the background. I didn't hear him.
I think it was Daniel. Go ahead, Daniel.
I said, you're like me, Bill. I turned 9 this year, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
You do take
the second
together, that's what age you are, right?
Well, I actually feel myself as the world's oldest teenager. Because,
yes,
as far as I'm concerned,
I remember that.
As far as I'm concerned, yeah. I'm 17.
Nice.
I can't convince my body of that, but, you know, mentally anyway.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I stopped counting myself, so I'm staying young myself.
I prefer
the best I can.
I prefer to be 21 so I can be legal to drink.
Yeah, yeah, you know, I always I of course never ever drank anything before I was 21. Although, if you guys want to know how far back I go, that wasn't the drinking age for me. It was 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Pick me. It was 17.
Yeah.
Me.
Well, I didn't say that's when I started. Now, there's a reason took me 38 years. There's a reason it took me 38 years to graduate from college.
Oh, that's awesome! That's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. So,
definitely. One of your cohorts is on, by the way. I wanted to take a moment to bring in one of your co-creators, the author,
okay,
Larry Hoy, who is just now joining us. Your mic is on, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, wonderful. It's an honor to be here. How you doing, Bill?
There he is.
Living the dream, Larry. Larry, story. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to turn it over to you, Bill.
Well, what I thought, I'm glad Larry's here because I was going to tell you a little bit about the new release coming Friday. It's the first book in a new series called, the series is called Hit World, and the book is called The Trash Man. And Hit World is, the line to describe it is that everything you don't believe is real. So, for all those people out there who are skeptical about Bigfoot or skinwalkers or vampires or whatever, well, in Hit World, they're all real. And it's an interesting world in that it started a long time ago on an AOL message board, and that's a really long story, so I'm not going to go into that. But I started writing this just for some fun, and it was a mystery. It was a noir mystery story, very short, in the style of Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, all those guys, that jargony 1940s kind of style. And a New York Times bestselling author took a look at the first 500 words and said, "You really ought to finish this. It's good enough that you should spend some time finishing." So I did. And do you guys know Tommy Hancock at Pro Se? I think it's Pro Se.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Pro Se Press. Yeah,
well,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. And so I showed it to Tommy at Mid-South Con a couple of years ago and said, it was about 5,000 words at the time. And I said, "Tommy, you know, what do you think?" And he said, he read it and he gave back to me the next morning. He goes, "If you can get that to 30K, I'll publish it. I don't have anywhere to put it, you know, anything shorter." So I got it up to about 9,500 words, but that's all I had. Anything else would have just been stretching it to stretch it. And so I just published it as a self-pub. It was called Kill Me When You Can. It was a neat little book. I was really, really pleased with it. I actually brought it to Imaginarium one year. And from that point on, I had always intended for it to be a shared universe with probably a whole bunch of people you know. Robert Krogh, I don't know if you know him. David Blaylock. All these people who were in my circle here in Memphis, writers who I knew, and Mid-South Con, I thought, we'll just write these and publish them, and if we make a buck, that's great, and if we don't, that's okay. We're just having fun with it. But then, that's where Mr. Hoy comes in. And I'm going to let him pick up the story from here.
So, I saw Bill's story, and it was a great premise. I love the premise. an assassin who is legal. I always tell people this is a John Wick meets Men in Black. So it's an assassin gets a job, and he gets to go out there and kill people. And I thought that was the greatest premise in the world, get to plot out people's deaths and horribly abuse them. So I pulled Bill aside. We attended the same writer support group, kind of like AA, except they all encourage you. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah. Here, have a drink.
Talk to Bill. Said, I would love to tell a story in this world, too. And together we teamed up on one. It was a little novelette called Shoot First. That one actually got released. You know, I released that to Amazon, Bill's other story, and somehow it got into the Mid-South Con and won a Darryl Award. So the whole plan for me is I was going to take these little short stories and serialize them, you know, have a new story once a month. I get a call from Bill the other, you know, a couple months back, and Bill's here, hey, I talked to Chris Kennedy. He does the Four Horsemen universe, and he'd like to start managing Hit World for us. I said, well, that's great, Bill. What do I need to do? He goes, well, you need to write a novel. Well, I'm pretty good at the short stories, and I've been comfortable there. Imaginarium's given me a couple awards for the short stories. And like I said, I was going for the serials. But then all of a sudden, I had to put on my big boy pants and going in for the long haul. So word got out. And evidently, everybody likes to write about assassins. So we're building up a extensive bibliography coming into this, and Bill's gonna he's the leadoff hitter with this trash man.
Yeah, the premise of the universe is that, and a lot of this backstory is Larry's. I'm gonna give him credit for it. 9/11 was much more successful than it was in real life. We're very respectful about that, by the way, because it was a traumatic day in our history. And it changed, it wiped out our government, and the only person left, the highest ranking person to take over as president, did not feel they had the political capital to go pursue the terrorists who were hiding out in other countries. So a bunch of billionaires got together and hired mercenaries and people from our government, and they went over and they took out the assassins, the terrorists. Wiped them out, killed them on pay TV. And so when they came back, now all of a sudden you've got these heroes. The public was very grateful, and everybody was trying to figure out what to do with them. And I'm not going to say which actor I'm talking about, but there was an actor who was written in as president who, when he died, they had to pry his gun from his cold, dead fingers.
Uh-huh.
And
I believe he was to say President Heston, but we're not going to.
Well, I think we are, but yeah. Right. Well, we're talking about Raymond. Yeah.
Fictional.
Yeah, Raymond Heston. Sure, you bet. And so a bunch of laws are passed that now that we've got these guys, they say, well, how can we cut down on the murder rate and do all that kind of stuff? Well, let's legalize murder under the conditions that you have to have a license, and it has to be governed by this quasi-federal government agency called Life Enders Incorporated. And so that's where we are. And if you're licensed, you're called a shooter. And if you actually kill people without being licensed, then anybody can kill you and take all your stuff. So... And that doesn't necessarily mean only the rich can do it, because although it's expensive for some people, there's three levels, and if you just want somebody taken out on the cheap, then they may, you know, you may get a rookie or an intern assassin who screws the whole thing up or something. But it's a lot cheaper. So if you're getting the idea that this is kind of there's a fun element to it. There is as much as there can be. It's kind of like John Wick. They're not fun movies, but boy, they sure are fun.
Oh yes, most definitely. So it's kind of like deer tags during hunting season, right?
Yeah,
getting permits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, the deer aren't really enjoying it, but everybody else is.
Yeah. Right.
But you got to thin the herd anyway.
But
yeah.
Well, and I was going to say, imagine that it's exactly the same, except imagine the deer are hiring the hunters to take out their enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
so you're a buck in the herd, but there's another. You're an 8-point, but he's a 12, and you're going, okay, I'm going to get rid of him, and I can have all the does. And so, you know, you hire some hunter to come in and take him out.
nice.
Yeah. And I don't want to give too much away, although when you look at the cover of the book, there is a giant orange rhino on it that's coming out of a big rip in the sky. But suffice to say that the main character falls in love with the wrong woman and then finds out that everything he believed, which he's the cynic who says, there's no Bigfoot. What are you, out of your mind? Things like that. And then he discovers that, well, actually, things might not be what he thought they were. And so it is a really fun read where it – someone told me the other day that if you liked Larry Correia's Monster Hunters, you would really enjoy it. I would say if you like Glenn Cook's Garrett P.I. series, you'd like it. But
oh, yeah.
The book, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, great stuff, and I'm a big fan, too.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's some influence in there because you can't help having an – the stuff you read just has an influence on you whether you want it to or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual influence for me on this book and its construction, and by construction I mean the scenes that I used and things like that, and the overall tone, was Roger Zelazny's Nine Princes in Amber.
Oh, yes.
And
love that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've read it probably 40 or 50 times. And
great stuff.
Someone who's also loves the book the other day was reading it, and they said, I don't understand. Tell me, because they'd already read this. They read an ARC of it. And they said, you know, tell me, I didn't see all that. So I told them at the points in which I'd looked at Zelazny and said, okay, how can I do my version of that in homage to him? And so when I told them, they realized, oh, yeah, okay, I can see that now. But it wasn't an obvious thing. It's not something where you're going to look at it and go, oh, that's the last one right there. So I think it's a really fun read. I know it's fast. It's around 90,000 words, but it reads really fast. And I'm hoping that it's as much fun as I think it is, and like Larry alluded to, we now have, I think, when you count the let me put it this way, it's so popular among the authors that heard the concept that we have an anthology that we didn't plan and we didn't ask anybody to write any stories for. They just wrote them and said, here.
Nice.
So
That's cool.
We ended up with all these stories we didn't know. Sure, I guess we're doing an anthology now, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, surprise! You have a new book. You didn't even know you were gonna have.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I remember telling Chris. I said, by the way, we're doing an anthology. He said, I don't remember that. I said, well, I didn't know we were doing it until we started getting stories for it.
And then after Bill told Chris, it's like, hey, we've got an anthology. Chris jumped back and goes, but I've got a bunch of writers that wanted to do an anthology. We have two anthologies.
Yeah.
In various stages.
We're going to have to do a second one because Chris said, I've got some other writers who I think are going to want to get in on this. And you know, I'd like them to be in the first one. And we didn't have enough stories for the first one yet already anyway, so it wasn't like we were bumping anybody. And so it looks like we'll probably wind up doing two. And the fun thing is, I'm writing my characters, and they're going to be a continuing story, and there's going to be recurring characters. But we're giving each author their opportunity to, within the limits, to define this as they see. So you're going to get a lot of different stories, and you're going to get a lot of different characters that are all obviously going to be centered around the same thing, but it's going to give everybody a chance to have a lot of fun with it and explore it and grow it the way they want to do.
Yeah, so it's a very creative shared universe, and likely to produce the kind of stuff like Ari Salvatore did when, you know, he brought Drizzt Do'Urden into that realm and really shined. You know, it's definitely sounds like that. Yeah, folks coming in who are going to make it breathe, you know, and live. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And today, I put something up this morning. Chris has he's like most of the publishers. He's got a page for all the fans and everything. And I put a post up this morning that said, okay, you're in a room, somebody breaks through the door, who is it? And I'll use, you know, whichever one I like best, I'll use. And I think I got 50 different responses from people. Everything from gnomes dressed like Kiss, a gnome tactical squad, and dressed like Kiss, and another guy.
Fantastic. It's my favorite band of all time, so hey, I love that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and after a while, I said, you know, these are so good. Don't count on these not being in the book somewhere else.
Yeah.
People just love this kind of thing. It is, you know, I don't want to make it sound silly, because it really isn't. It's fun, and yeah, there's a lot of, if you know me, I can't help making a joke out of everything I do. But there's still a serious side to it. It's still a serious story to a point. I mean, I think even in the most tragic circumstances, there's always a bit of humor in anything. I don't care how horrible it is, even if it's only a moment, because I think that's part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always going to get a little bit of that. And so this one is going to be that borderline, you know, action, fast. The stakes really are real for our characters. They do matter. There are people here that can get hurt that you probably don't want to get, or maybe you do want to be hurt. But anyway, I think people will enjoy it if they like that kind of story.
So will they have I'm trying to get a full sense of it, but will the stories have a range of kind of styles per se? I mean, some will be a darker edge, some will be more humorous, some will be more, you know, maybe more like a hard science fiction-esque kind of thing.
Yes.
Are they
going to
be
yes.
a range within the universe?
They are, yes. We're going to try and keep it a little bit lighter. Larry and I co-wrote the second book, just like we did the second novella. And I think we both brought a bit of pathos, but also a little bit of humor. Sometimes it's gallows humor, or the humor of, you know, people in combat where they're making jokes even though somebody's trying to kill them. And they're doing it to relieve the tension within themselves and all that kind of thing. But, for example, in the book, in the second book, it's called A Bullet for the Shooter. And I can't give away too much, or Larry will get really mad. But there are people in it that aren't necessarily alive and who have vices that they pursue that are kind of like, well, if I'm dead, who cares? So, and then in book one, there's a Charlie's Angels moment where someone who's giving orders may or may not be dead. You don't know. He is taxidermied, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's dead.
Right.
Yeah, we do.
Awesome.
We do want to open it up, and we do. We allow it. The different writers are going to pull in their own characters to tell their own stories. We've got book three, it, I don't believe it even directly touches Lifeenders Incorporated, but they're using their our world to tell their story. It just happens to take place in the same universe. So there's
nice.
Now's a good time. The world is wide open, and I'm just excited to see everywhere it's going.
And
very nice.
Larry makes a really good point, because it, in one way, I think it's a little bit like the 1632 universe when it first got started with Eric Flint. And I'm told, you know, that Eric thought it was just a one-off. He was going to write this and be fun, and that he'd be done with it. And now we're, whatever we are, 200 books later. And they have, you know, they have a backstory for every single person that's living in this little village that got, sent back to 1632. And you can't violate the rules and all that, because it, so many stories have been written by so many people, and they've got to keep everything straight. Ours is a little bit bigger than that, in that we're dealing with the entire world, but there are certain things that you have to follow. We have a magic system that has very, very definite rules. And the magic is, it's a natural force that obeys very, very, very strong and definite rules. You can't violate from it and all that. And I have to tell you that I honestly think it's a unique magic system in the way that it's been implemented. If it's not unique, it hasn't been done much. I have never seen it before, but there's so much stuff out there being written that it's hard to say for sure.
And to throw out on this, while the magic system is solid all the way through, it affects people differently. Each person will have, or can have, a completely different touch into the magic, if they have any at all.
Yeah. Magic is I don't think it's going to bother anybody to tell them this. Magic is measured, your ability to use magic is measured on a scale that goes from 0 to 42. And I picked 42 because I'm a big Douglas Adams fan.
Nice. Yes.
And so I thought, well, you know, let's give Adams a shout out here. Everybody, Larry's right. Everybody has, if they can use magic at all to any appreciable degree, they may not be able to use it the way somebody else might. And it may or may not be there when they need it. So it's not like you've got a 17th level magic user throwing a spell of forgetfulness on somebody, or it doesn't necessarily work that way. That might actually happen, but in Hit World, you wouldn't necessarily know that it works that way. And let's remember, we're talking about, there are beasts and, you know, all kinds of cool stuff, but the vast majority of the people who live there are like the vast majority of the people living on Earth in our time, in that they watch Ancient Aliens and roll their eyes and go, boy, that guy's got weird hair. And they watch Finding Bigfoot and they yell at the screen, you know, you hadn't found him yet, why are you still looking, you know. They don't believe any of this stuff. They think it's all just, you know, nonsense. They don't particularly like science fiction. They think guys like you and me are nuts. And yet, in Hit World, that's all the same thing. Those same people think the same thing. And yet in Hit World, it really is all real. They just don't know it. Kind of like it might be here, you know. There might actually be grays walking around or something, and we just don't know it. And until we know it, then we're denying it. So it's all there. It's just a question of whether it's going to rear its head or not.
Very nice. Well, I'd like to ask you about a little bit about process here and get back to you and Larry as far as I'd love to hear about writers' processes, especially when we get a chance to talk to people that are co-writing something. And so I wanted to just see if you and Larry could comment just a little bit about your process in co-writing and how you two work together in that area.
Okay. Larry, you can start off.
All right. Well, like I said, I was already planning out going with cereals. So, little Nobiolas. We did shoot first. I had pretty much finished the second book, and I was working on the third, and Bill said, hey, we need a novel now. So I packaged up what I had, and I sent it to him while I continued the next third of the book. So I gave Bill the first third. I had started on the second third. Bill reads it, says, okay, I made a couple edits, but I really don't care for your villain. Would you mind changing the villain? Stuff like that. That killed me. Like, well, Bill, I'm on the second part of the book right now. I will have to say it was a perfect call. I'm pretty good at short stories, but having an experienced writer going back after me and having a look at it, it helped me grow as a writer so much quicker. And I will have to say I'm much better today than I was a year ago when this was dropped on my shoulders. But I would take the first run at it, and then I'd pass it over to Bill, and Bill would critique it, have me go back and change some works, and then Bill would have the last run at it and clean up all my loose ends that I left hanging out there. So Bill's the leadoff and the cleanup hitter.
Very cool.
Well, Larry has one of the good things about Larry is that he's warped. And I'm warped in a different way. Larry's a lot more bloodthirsty. I'm pretty bloodthirsty. I'm not sure how to exactly explain it, but it's different.
So,
and
Bill claimed in the beginning that his inspiration for this world is Roger Zelenay and great series. I grew up reading Stephen King, and it might show.
Yeah, and our styles were not similar, so it took a little while to figure out, you know, what to write, what to rewrite, and all that kind of stuff. And I knew that as much as I possibly could, I didn't want to rewrite anything of Larry's. You know, I wanted to leave it in his voice and all that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of what I tried to do. I did bring the ghosts into it. I think I did that,
yeah.
Didn't I, Larry?
Yeah. Yes.
And so
you made the
Larry
ghosts
was
a character.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I think you had him there, and this has been a long time ago, so we're kind of going back. And it's all just a question of whoever the primary writer is. If I'm in the project and I'm co-writing, I don't think it works, because I've actually just had this conversation with somebody with them writing one chapter and me writing another. I think mm-hmm. that might work for some folks. I'm not sure I could do that. Now, if Larry Correa wants to call me and say he wants to try that, I'll try it. But since that's probably not going to happen, then I'm just going to kind of go with, I try not to mess with the voice of the person that's writing the story too much. I mean, if I do rewrite something, I try to do it with as gentle a touch as possible. Let me put it that way. I think, Larry, I think the only thing I added to this that wasn't already there, Larry, in some form or fashion, was the epilogue. And I'm big.
There were other people. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, so I like epilogues. I like prologues and epilogues, and people think people keep telling me you can't use prologues. They don't do them anymore, and I keep doing it. And people keep telling me you can't use epilogues. And, you know, So, as far as process goes, I think that's pretty much it. I know that Larry gave me the manuscript. What was your final, Larry? Something like 76,000 words?
I think it was like 85. But I cut mine back down, and then you added yours. It grew again.
Right. I think you – anyway, it's going out. I know I added a bunch of stuff, details here and there. But the main thing in co-writing for me is – because I am doing one right now with a young lady, and I've now done a bit of it. The main thing for me is, A, I don't want to step on the other writer's toes, and B, I don't really care who does what as long as the book turns out to be as good as it possibly can. And the only other way I've seen it done, since we're talking process, is right now are you familiar with Charles Gannon writes for Bane and Chris Gannon?
Yes.
Okay. And he writes, mm-hmm. he has a series, very popular series called the Kane Reardon Universe. And last mm-hmm. year, Chris published six novellas in that universe called The Murphy's Lawless. And they were written by six different authors. And Charles Gannon was the editor of that series, and then he brought them all together, added about 40,000 words, and it was published as a novel. I think it was 235,000 words or something. And so he's doing that again this year, and I am writing one of those stories. And so that's a completely different kind of co-writing, in that I'm writing the novella, but I'm writing in a shared universe. But I'm writing it in between two other stories.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like sewing on, it's like transplanting something onto someone's body. You've got to get all the veins and arteries connected correctly and all the nerves and all that. So it is co-writing, but it's in a completely different way because I'm not using anybody else's words. I'm just coordinating facts.
Right.
And,
yeah, self-contained story. Yeah.
It is. It's a self-contained story, but within a larger continuous story.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and the story right before mine leads directly into mine. There is no timeline. So
mm-hmm.
I have to kind of pick up where the action's left off and figure out how to do backstory and all that kind of stuff, introduce characters. And it's really been a lot of fun because I've gotten to work with some pretty amazing authors. And, you know, for one thing, Chuck Gannon is an amazing guy. And so it's been a real learning experience as far as that goes in how to do this. And then how to come up with some things that had not been thought of before without stepping on anybody's toes. And it's just been a great experience.
Well, that sounds amazing. Yeah, definitely. That sounds very interesting kind of. Co-writing approach in terms of, like you said, it was like different self-contained novellas that are kind of merged in a way. That is interesting. Yeah, I'm getting a sense of that.
The author before me is Kevin Eikenberry. Kevin has done a lot of stuff for various people, mostly for Chris, but also he's doing some stuff with I know he's co-writing a book with Eric Flint. And so, you know, Kevin's an amazing writer in his own. And today, for example, we were going back and forth on radio call signs between his unit that's in his story and mine. Because they're, although mm-hmm. they're on another planet in a long time from now, they all are, they all come from Earth, the U.S. They all come from Earth, not necessarily the U.S. military, but Earth, in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And so his call signs have got to merge mine. We've got to make sure that we're on the same page with describing it because some characters do lap over and you know, how do they look? Where's their hairline? I mean, all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's been really pretty interesting. It really has. It reminds me of a book a long time ago called, what was it? The Sign of the Manatee or something. I can't remember. It's a long time ago, 15 of Florida's best crime writers got together and wrote a serial novel where each one of them wrote a chapter. And they kept trying to one it off on somebody and then pass it on to the next one. And that was done just for fun and for charity. But this is, this is for a different purpose. But I think it's probably somewhat the same process. And if it's good enough, listen, if it's good enough for Elmore Leonard, it's plenty good enough for me.
Wow, that is an awesome project. And Daniel Rose, I know I've asked a few questions here. What have you been wanting to ask Bill? Anything at the moment?
Go ahead, Rose.
Daniel?
Is Rose there?
I think so.
Right. Yeah, I'm here. I've just been listening.
I put him to sleep.
There she is.
No,
no, not at all. Yeah, I just didn't want to hog all the questions there. Yeah, but go ahead, Daniel.
Where can we find that book so we'll know whether we want to become a part of it or not?
Okay. The book is on Amazon. It's being released Friday. And it's called The Trash Man, obviously. I write under William Allen Webb because the world is full of Bill Webbs. They're everywhere. And William Webb on Amazon isn't that much less common, but William Allen Webb, so far, I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're at all interested, I'm on Facebook. You're welcome to, find me. You can, for more information on the series, you can go to CKP, The Factory Floor. That's Chris's group for fans of Chris Kennedy Publishing on Facebook. And
okay.
I think he's got a lot of faith in the project because he has created it now has its own imprint. So Hit World Press is a thing.
Very cool.
And you can reach out to us through, I believe we both have Amazon author pages. Both Bill and I are on Facebook. We're going to try and make it as easy as possible for you to find us.
Yeah. If you hear a knock on your door one night and it's us, don't be surprised because, we're going door to door throughout the country.
Very nice. Well, I will give you some good quality Kentucky bourbon if you stop by here. So I'll try to lure you to visit me then because this sounds
fun.
And if
you're not home, then, at Imaginarium next time, I'll remind you that you said that.
Right. No problem. Yeah, because I kind of figured
I'm going through
Go ahead, Larry.
Third Reserve right now.
Oh, nice. Excellent. That's 15 minutes from my house, their distillery. So, yeah, I'm very partial to Woodford Reserve. Good stuff. Good stuff. But I was actually, on your site at lastbrigade.com, I was looking at first of all, I mean, you come on that page and it's like, it's a gallery. I mean, you just got just such a nice display of book covers there when you open that page up. But I kind of figured, this was the new release because you have the orange rhino coming through the fissure there front and center. And, definitely cannot miss this cover. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I take no credit for the cover other than Chris asked me what I'd like to see on the cover. And I said, well, if you can find somebody to do it, that's actually a Racono. It's not a rhino. It's like a rhino, except it's the size of a locomotive. And it has more horns and it's carnivorous, not vegetarian, herbivorous. And it's interdimensional. So it enjoys...
An interdimensional, carnivorous, rhinoceros-like giant creature. Okay, I'm sold.
Yes, the horn is used to rip holes in space, so that's why it's charging out at you. And once there's even a man who has to go behind it and fix things. repair the space-time continuum. Well, you know, you got to get the details.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so Chris asked me, he said, is there anything you'd like to see on the cover? I said, you know, I've never seen an orange rhino on a book cover before. And I think that
nope.
would really be neat.
I have
he
not
said,
either.
Not. He said, I have never asked for the cover artist to do an orange rhino. So I think I want to do that. So that's the only input I had. He did a great job. I mean, that's really a nice cover.
Yeah.
I'm very, very happy.
Yeah, it's nice, and yeah, they're very eye catching, and yeah, certainly I was curious the minute I saw it when I had to open up your page. Yeah, definitely. And
yeah,
quite a lot of good covers you have, by the way. I will compliment you on a lot of good covers on your gallery there. Yeah, a lot of good cover work. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. Most of those I've not done. I have done a couple of them, and there's another book I've got coming out. That I edited in my last Brigade Universe, it's coming out next month, that I pretty much did the whole covers. And it came out, I think, really well. But I'm a big believer that there are pros. Pros are pros for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to hire somebody to do something, people hire lawyers all the time and then don't take their advice. And I can only imagine, why do you hire somebody if you're not going to take their advice? Why are you going to ask them to do something if you're not going to use it? And for a book of mine, I don't know if you guys know who Simon Vance is, but he's a world-class audiobook narrator. Some George R. R. Martin work. He's done work for Anne Rice, and, you know. Anyway, so he actually did one of my audiobooks, and he wrote me with a list of about 200 things, and he said, now, how do you want me to do this, and how do you want me to do that? And I told him, I said, listen, you know, you're the artist. You interpret things, too.
Mm-hmm.
You do it the way you think it needs to be done. And so that's my opinion on the covers, and it has, generally speaking, turned out to be great. Yeah, I've been very lucky.
Very nice. And yes, that thing with lawyers also happens to editors sometimes where people don't necessarily listen to you. I know that happens with the editors too sometimes. But
I tell you what, not you, Clayton.
If one of my great writers I work with, Clayton, is listening in the chat room, I'm not speaking about you.
I'll say this. I had a book come out last year. Chris did that one too, called Have a Keyboard, Will Type. And it's about the lessons I've learned along the way, you know, in writing. And when it comes to editors, I said, if your editor tells you something, just say, okay, that's the only answer you need. Because if they're good enough to edit your book and you trust them to edit your book and they tell you to do something, then do it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not.
That's true. I feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, editors are good at what they do for a reason, and if they're not good at what they do, then why are you using them?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. As a writer, I feel exactly as you do. Yeah. When I'm coming at it from that angle, yeah, definitely. I've got the ear open and the will to listen for sure. For the same reasons you just spoke of. Yeah.
I think I've probably argued with various editors, I don't know, 3 or 4 times, maybe. And they're just almost always right. So I just more or less rubber stamp everything.
Oh, just. Yeah, Clayton was giving me a little trouble there in the chat room already. My comments. but no, it's true. It's true. So what you also, I get a sense from looking at browse, like again, your website, and I'll say it again, thelastbrigade.com, but it looks like you have quite a bit coming up. I mean, do you want to talk about beyond Friday, some of the other things that you have coming up on the horizon? Because it does look like you got as you said earlier, a crazy busy year ahead of you.
Yeah, we've got, let's see, Larry and A Bullet for the Shooter, Larry, in my book, comes up on the February, is it, I believe it's the 26th.
Yeah.
Also from Chris. After that, there will be a third book in the Hit World series by a gentleman named John Sears. And John is another local writer here in Memphis who Larry and I both know, and a great guy, great writer. He writes a spinoff series that's very called The Luna Free State, which is very Moon is a Harsh Mister-ish. Mistress-ish, whatever, if that's even a word. And then after that, it will extend. That book's called The Fairy Band, and then Hit World will extend after that. I have a second book I'm going to write later this year in the Four Horsemen universe. My first one was called High Mountain Hunters, and it's about Gurkhas in space. In a universe of mercenaries, I was lucky that book 57, nobody had ever written about Gurkhas.
Wow.
And then, yeah, I know. To me, it just seems like low-hanging fruit, but...
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to be writing a sequel to that called No Cowards Allowed. And the second Hit World novel I actually began late last night, early this morning. And I had to do some research. Well, I'm not going to say what, because that kind of gave away the opening, but I had to do some research on it first. And then I've also got, there's a lot of new stuff. The Last Brigade series, I'm not sure how many people are familiar with it, but the idea is that, and this was the first novel I had published in this, was the one, first one in the series, and it involves the idea that cryogenics was invented back in the 1990s, mid-1990s. But the military took it, mostly the Army, kept it secret because it was not something we wanted everybody to get out in the other countries to use and all that. Because what we did is, as people got out of the military who did not have a reason to stay in this world, they didn't have kids, they didn't have a girlfriend or a wife or anything, they were asked, or a husband, they were asked to go into cryogenic sleep against the day we might need them again. Because if you've trained for 20 years as a tanker, tank commander and commanding a tank battalion or brigade, then we can't easily replicate those skills. And over a period of time, we've built up this large number of people who we're supposed to call on when we need them. Then a disaster happens and they are not awakened. And they're awakened 50 years later by mistake. It's an accident. There is no United States anymore. That's gone. It's been replaced by warlords and occult and, you know, stuff like that. And these people have to try and rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the main series. That's The Last Brigade. And then Time Wars is a series about – it's actually in an alternate universe to that, obviously with dinosaurs and time machines and – of course, people get eaten by dinosaurs. That's kind of where I started hitting my stride on, gee, you know, how can we kill people in really creative ways?
Nice.
And
go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I was just going to say, and then I have my fantasy series because that's actually the oldest thing I've ever written called Sharp Steel and High Adventure. And it's very much – but it's very much a Robert E. Howard, not necessarily just Conan, but Robert E. Howard influenced universe that also has a lot of Fritz Leiber in it, if anybody's ever read Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser.
I have not read that. No, I have not.
Leiber's an interesting guy because he came along within a year or two of when Howard killing himself, you know, Howard committed suicide at age 30.
Right. Yeah, love and Howard. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Absolutely. And Leiber came along within a couple of years after that. Now, his style is completely different from Howard. He's a very, very literary typewriter, but he does write about a 7-foot-tall redhead giant, barbarian kind of guy, and then a 5-foot-tall gray-clad thief. I mean, it's right out of D&D, but 40 years before anybody ever heard of D&D. And they're funny. Each of them has their own wizard who's their patron. And the wizards don't like each other, so they're always pitting them against each other. But the two guys like are best friends, you know, things like that. It's just a really inventive series. Went on for a long time. I think Liber won 2 or 3 Hugos, and he was considered one of the founders of this genre. Anyway, so my series takes a lot after him, and it takes a lot after Howard. And then there's some fun things thrown in because my two heroes meet Conan coming out of a bar. He's not named Conan, but it's, you know, it's Conan. And then they also meet the Grey Mouser later on down the wharf. I'm not going to get sued. I didn't name anybody that, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun. There's a lot more coming. There's a lot of things. I also write a lot of military nonfiction. In 2019, I wrote a book called Killing Hitler's Reich, The Battle for Austria, 1945, which was 300,000 words, took 13 years to write, and it's the definitive, if anybody's a World War II buff, it's the definitive book on the battle for Austria in 1945. And I think it probably will be for a long time.
Oh, I've got some friends that are definitely World War II history buffs. One of whom actually is developing a feature film where he put together the largest collection for his kind of concept trailer of working German armor that's ever been assembled for like a visual media project. He had even more working actual vintage German armor in his project than they had in Private Ryan. And I am not kidding you. It is impressive.
Wow,
it was a whole column of German armor. Vintage working that he was able to put together for it, and it's phenomenal. His name Silvio Wolf Busch is his name, so keep an eye out for him and that project, because I bet you he'll get it. But I know guys like him would go crazy about these titles you're talking about for sure.
Well, yeah, and I'm actually writing a sequel to that about a different battle, but he's the kind of guy I wrote this for, because I'm just a world. That's the first thing I remember in my life is World War II, reading about World War II when I was 8. I'm one of them. I'm a geek when it comes to German armor and stuff. And in one of the last brigade books, the last one, vintage German aircraft, including a German reconnaissance plane, which they only built a few of them, Blumenvoss 141, and then they had a Stuka tank buster with 37mm gun slug under the wings late in the war.
JU-87.
And one of the, yep.
Nice.
JU-87. And there's even one of those in my books. So that tells you right there that stuff's all just, you know, for me, it's all bread and butter. In fact, if we're really going to talk about stuff coming down the line, I'm supposed to be writing an alternate World War II trilogy for Eric Flint's Ring of Fire Press. So we'll see.
Well, if you have someone like Hans Rudell piloting your JU-87, yeah, it'll be pretty effective.
yeah, it would be. Let me tell you, it was really a lot of fun to write all that stuff, because I was right in my wheelhouse. And it sounds, you tell that stuff and it sounds kind of silly when you talk about that stuff, but within the books are not actually particularly funny. And
Right.
But it was just so much fun to write about. I'm sure it came through.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll be checking these out myself, because I'm a –
you know, definitely love history, and definitely am not as versed as Silvio exact to his level, but yeah, definitely do have a little bit of grasp on World War II history. So yeah, I'm even going to check these out. Fantastic. That's awesome.
I appreciate that. And Silvio is right up my alley because, you know, Saving Private Ryan had a lot of armor, but it didn't have all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a working King Tiger out there it did not have. There's only one, but there
yes,
is.
Yes, there is. Yes.
So,
yeah.
Yep. Anyway,
I'll have to get that info to you from off the air. I'll have to get that info on all the stuff that Silvio had in his column that he was able to put together. But it's pretty impressive. I'll get the details on that for you for sure.
I would appreciate it. And here's an interesting connection. I don't know if it's true or not, but there's another book in the Killing Hitler's Reich series that I'm about 90,000 words into it. I'm not finished it, but I'm hoping it comes out this year. But at the very end of the book, it starts talking about a tank that was, I'm trying to remember if it was a tank or if it might have been a Sturmgeschütz, a powered self-propelled artillery. But anyway, that they pulled out of a Russian lake in 2002. And
it might have been the Sturm Tiger with the rocket propelled kind of shells in it. The Sturm Tiger. It might have been that one. I don't know.
This wasn't the Sturm Tiger. It was one of the,
yeah,
because this was late 42 and they didn't have those yet.
No, that's true. Yeah.
They had Tigers, but they didn't have them, and not in this area because it didn't have the roads necessary for something that big. But they pulled it out of the mud in 2002 and the crew was still in it. And they were going to restore it, and I heard they did restore it to working order. So it would really be interesting to see if that story that's being told as the epilogue of that book is, you know, if he's got video of that actual vehicle. That would be interesting.
That would be. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. All your listeners are going, why are these guys talking about World War II?
Well, it fits into your works, so yeah, it does fit.
Well,
you've got some titles here that relate, yeah, for sure. And but yeah, anytime I get somebody on that's interested in that, I love to get a little tidbit or two in there. And I know Daniel loves historical stuff, and I know Rose does, so I'm sure they don't mind. Good stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Daniel.
No, just keep talking, man.
What are some of your favorite promotional things that you do? Amen.
Now, that's an
interesting
question.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
No. That's a great question. By promotional, I assume you mean not ads per se.
Right. I mean, just something unique that you do that for promotion, whether it's like blog or.
Well,
social media.
I do social media a lot. I'm on social media all the time. I have a rule, very strict rule, that I will not, under any circumstances, talk politics or religion. Moving them around. In today's world, if you do that, it doesn't matter what your stance is. You are going to alienate half your audience.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And I see no point to it. So anyway, that's for me. But I do use it a lot because I enjoy interacting with people. I've had a lot of people who I don't know comment how – they really appreciate the time I take to answer pretty much every question. I might miss one here and there, but if people leave comments on the ads I run or on my my page, which the Worlds of William Allen Webb is my Facebook page, and if people ask me questions there, I had one gentleman who said, "I can't believe you responded to me," and to me, I can't believe you bothered to leave me a message. I'm always paying attention to the fact that people don't have to spend their money buying my books. They don't have to spend the time reading my books. I'm just very grateful that they do. And if they don't like them, then that's a valid opinion. Sure, it hurts. But as far as promotional, I'm trying to think. I don't do swag. I don't. I know people like free stuff, but I don't use it because whenever I leave a con, I see people dumping out a lot of stuff in the garbage.
Now, Bill has released two short stories on the Hit World Universe, the Facebook. And right now, that's the only place you can get them is in his Facebook area, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, actually, they're on Chris's. I released them on the factory floor, which is CKP, the factory floor on Facebook. All you've got to do is search for that. And I released them. There is that. Thank you, Larry. I'd forgotten I did that. I released one last Tuesday. And then I released one yesterday called Men in Dark Gray. Men in Black have been – these guys aren't quite Men in Black, so they're and Dark Gray is a little bit classier as far as they're concerned anyway. And so I did release it there. It's about 1,000. Well, that one's about 1,200 words, and it gives a really good flavor of the universe and how it's going to play out and the tone and all that. And it's about two guys chasing an alien through the sewers of Paris.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun to write anyway. Thank you, Larry. That was a good point. And so I do a lot of that kind of stuff. I don't give away a lot of things at signings or anything because I'm not sure that people actually really need more bookmarks or erasers or things like that. They might, and I know a lot of authors do it and have a lot of success with it. I do like to carry postcards, promotional postcards with me wherever I go. And I am... In case you haven't noticed, I talk. I'm not particularly shy. And when I'm out and about, when you're at the grocery, wherever you are, somebody's going to ask you, how are you today? How you doing today? And if you really want to mess with their mind, don't do what everybody says, oh, I'm fine. Answer with, I'm living the dream. And they don't really understand how to process that. Most people will, if you tell them that, they're going to think you're kidding. And you say, no, I write books for a living. I get to tell people about orange rhinos and stuff. I'm living the dream.
Nice.
And
no,
then I'll
that.
Ask them, are you a reader? I will ask almost anybody, are you a reader? And most of them understand, and when they do answer, I say, what do you like to read? And so if they like it, they sound like they might like my stuff, I will pull out a promotional postcard, and then I will sign it for them. And while they might take the postcard and throw it away, most people, when you've signed something, they hesitate. There's just some... part of a human being that loves autographs and always has. It's been a thing for a long time. And mm-hmm. It's a personal piece of the author. It's a personal piece of someone who created something. And in a lot of cases, they will at least go home and look you up to say, is this guy a nut? Or is he somebody that everybody else knows about and I've just never heard of? So I would have to say that's probably the biggest promotional thing I don't see a lot of people doing. I'm not sure a lot of people would because it requires you to put yourself out there and talk to strangers. And it's not the easiest thing for some people to do. I don't mind because I haven't had security called on me yet anyway.
Well, I'm fine talking to people like whenever I'm out and I'm me and I'm supposed to be talking to people, but if I'm at the grocery store somewhere, then I'm all like low key, you know, nobody talk to me. I just want to get my groceries and
well, okay.
Wear my dark sunglasses and leave the store.
But in all seriousness, you might be missing an opportunity. So when and it's okay. I mean, it's your business. It's how you do things, and not. I am a 65-year-old man, so things are not going to work for me that might work for you, and things might not work for you that work for me. But I have found that personalization. There's one kid at the local Kroger that every time I go in and he's sacking the groceries, he always looks at me and goes, "Living the dream," points at me.
I've got some kid at Kroger that's similar.
I still try not to really engage, because then once I start engaging with people, then it goes further, and then they're messaging me and asking me out, and it just gets to be a problem.
Well, see, now, that does not happen to me, and it's probably never going to happen to me. So I do get it. And I would say, well, I'm not going to say that. These days, you've got to be careful what you say about anything. But that is one way I do things. If you give somebody a business card and you say, "You might like my stuff," that's not going to tell them nearly as much as if you hand them a postcard.
All right.
And so it's not hard to just have some printed up. I think it's pretty nice to have maybe a full cover on the one side, and then on the flip side have a little bit of information about whatever it is and where they can find it, your name and where mm-hmm. they can find it. And then just hand it out and say, you know, here's this, you might like it. And it's a nice cover and it's well done. I imagine you're probably going to get mm-hmm. 1 in 5 people who will actually go home and look it up.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's probably a really good percentage.
No, you're right. No, it is a really good percentage, most definitely. And to get a good two-sided card is not that expensive. Yeah, indie authors can definitely afford that. That's to get a really nice, glossy, two-sided color, you know, postcard. It's not that bad, folks. Yeah. So, yeah, he's recommending something that all of you can afford, folks.
Yeah, they go for, you know, by the time, if you order them in bulk, they go for 3 or 4 cents a piece.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah, gotprint.net's the one I use, but, yeah, there's definitely several vendors that make nice ones that are in that kind of affordability. But, yeah, good.
Yeah.
Definitely a good recommendation.
I use this to print a lot, but, you know, it doesn't matter. Like you said, there's a bunch of them. Don't put it on
us. Yeah. Yeah, there definitely are. Well, we're coming up on about a couple minutes left in the show, Bill. So is there anything that we have not covered that you were wanting to make sure to get out, and also you, Larry, as well?
I can't possibly imagine it. I'm sure that people are tired of hearing me talk by now. I will only say
not
that
at all.
If you the Trash Man comes out Friday. If you read it, I hope you really enjoy it. I can tell you that I put everything I had – every idea I've had that I haven't been able to use in past years is in that book. And
very cool.
I'm really, really proud of it. I don't think it's going to be like anything you've ever read before.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. And it comes out Friday, correct? In print and ebook.
In both print and
all formats. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Great. Nice. Fantastic. And, and Larry, yeah, anything you wanted to cover that we may not have?
Just throwing back out there, Bill's book comes out Friday. Bullet for Shooter comes out February 26th. And if you grab it and if you love it, please throw a review out there. Reviews are always appreciated.
Oh,
it's going to
be
oh yes. Okay. Most definitely. Yeah, reviews, folks, yeah. All authors appreciate reviews, and it's not easy to always get folks to do that. So, yeah, definitely
yes,
endorse
we
that.
Do.
Yeah.
I just want to
go ahead.
I wanted to say thank you for having us on. Yeah, I just wanted to thank you for having us on.
Absolutely, Bill. And definitely want to have you guys both back and to visit again in the near future, because it sounds like, yeah, you got a lot to be talking about next year with all these releases. And we'll have our first ever Star Chamber Show German Armor episode. Maybe we'll have you guest on that too. but no, thank you so much for joining us. And I'll go ahead and I'll let both you and Larry say whatever you'd like to take us all out. And then Daniel Rose, you can give us the outro. But yeah, thanks so much for being on the show tonight. And everybody, yeah, join us next week in the Star Chamber Show, 9 p.m. Eastern, every Wednesday, for a great visit with great creatives like we've had tonight with Bill and Larry. So turn over to you two guys, and then Rose and Daniel take us out.
Larry, I just want to say thank you for listening, if you're still with us. And if you're listening to this later, I appreciate it. It's a long show, and I had a lot to say, but I really do appreciate everybody who's out there. We would not be authors without you.
All right.
And just to echo that, absolutely. It's been a wonderful evening. Thank you for this. And we really are living the dream. We get to tell stories and hopefully entertain you. So are you not entertained?
Fantastic. All right, Rose.
Thank you all so much for being on the Star Chamber Show, and I hope to hear from you guys again and see you at Imaginarium this year. It's going to happen. I just know it. We're going to have it.
It is. It is. And Daniel.
And if you've enjoyed what you heard tonight and enjoy listening to great authors and great creatives talk about how they do what they do and learn more about the creative world, bring a friend with you next week. And so you can share this experience with somebody else. And then y'all can talk about it after the show. This is Daniel Dark signing off.